criminal case moves slowly. This is also an issue that I think sometimes immigration attorneys want to know. What's the outcome of the case? When's it going to be resolved? And this is sort of a roadmap of how a case moves through the criminal court. We use the term magistration in Texas, which is like arraignment. So your person is arrested, they go through booking, then they are set for bail and they decide probable cause. Then the court appoints an attorney. So you may be surprised that your client won't actually have a criminal defense attorney if they're indigent right away. It won't be until the case has actually already started to move through the courts a little bit. The case, then the DA has a certain amount of days to file the case. There'll be a grand jury on felonies unless they waive grand jury. Then you start plea negotiations. And then there's plea and trial. So there's a whole bunch of steps that happen first. So if you you need to sometimes be patient, especially if your client is not detained on the criminal side. There'll be a lot of settings. I mean, that defense attorney may set this case out for a month, and you'll see these settings every month, and you think, oh, they're working, you know, each one is like a motion filed. No, 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 no. That's like they're with the DA with a coffee, and they're like, did you look at that case yet? No, cool, all right. Set it out a month, and that's what happens. These caseloads are huge. If the person's not detained and they had, you know, they'll ask the DA at a setting, are you ready to talk about this? And it's like, no, I haven't called the witness yet. That could happen in five settings. And it's not the defense attorney's fault, and there's nothing they can really do to make the DA contact the witness in a timely fashion. So just also have realistic expectations about how fast.
And just a quick note on that. I work really closely with criminal defense counsel in East Texas, and it's in a variety of different sorts of collaborative relationships. So, but one thing that I've heard pretty consistently is, oh, well, I worked with this immigration attorney, and they were really angry with me when I wasn't able to do this. And it leaves a bad taste in their mouth, which isn't helpful for anybody, right? Because we have to work together with the ever-expanding world of crimmigration. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that these types of collaborative relationships can take many different forms. So we work with a law firm out of Tyler when every single time we pick up the phone and they have a question, even though it's a question that they know the answer to because they've asked me 500 times, they cut me a check. Sometimes they'll cut me a check and then send the client. We send clients back to them. With local criminal defense in Nacogdoches, we just ping-pong clients back and forth. And they just pick up the phone. They don't cut me a check, but it works out that way. And these relationships are really so beneficial to the client, to you, to your ability to litigate cases. As an example, this law firm in Tyler that I was telling you guys about, they had a client come in. She was charged with felony Social Security disability fraud, I think it was, to the tune of $250,000. She was a longtime LPR. This case, every single issue that came up in this case, I would call Jordan. Jordan and I are law school clinic partners.
Still.
And every single question, every single crimmigration question in this case was a law school essay.
It was like a law school test. Final exam. Like fraud and theft and like 8 million different. It was like the perfect patient if you wanted to study everything.
Yeah. And it was the case that I've most heavily litigated. It's probably the case of my career, so I'm on the downslope now. But the reason that I was able to save this incredible saint of a woman who was treated so horrifically by ICE is because at the very beginning, the criminal defense attorney sent her immediately to my dad first. And they started talking and crafting a plea. And the feds were not backing off on this because of the amount of money. And so what ended up happening is in the plea agreement, this was a fraud case, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but the amount of money defrauded matters in terms of how it's categorized. Basically, if it's an AGFEL, it has to have a certain threshold. In the plea, the criminal defense attorney was able to specifically leave it under a dollar amount, even though factually that wasn't the case, and even though the restitution amount was like 200 times higher, right? But he did that for the purpose of, at the very, very end, we won that case, and that lady gets to stay with her severely disabled son because of this relationship from the very beginning.
Right. Yeah. No, that's such a great example. And I just want to say, here's your ethics portion, guys. Some of this counts for ethics. Remember that defense counsel does have a pretty high duty to their clients, and I think this is sometimes. There's confusion in the defense bar, and I do a lot of trainings, and we're trying to clear it up about what specific detailed advice means. You also shouldn't have defense attorneys just kicking the case to you and not talking to you after you give the advice. It's really important that you all be on the same page. I know good criminal defense attorneys who are like, I gave them the number of an immigration attorney to call. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. You need to call that immigration attorney. You need to have that conversation. There's nothing wrong with your client also speaking to the immigration attorney, but you all need to be all on the same page. And actually, since I resent this PowerPoint yesterday, TIDC just issued new guidance for like the criminal defense, like the highest bar for what criminal defense should look like, and you should see how detailed the immigration advice is supposed to be. It says every advisor should cover inadmissibility, deportability, mandatory detention, options for relief, naturalization. That's all in the new TIDC guidance. People in my office were like, we're so glad you're there because we would be in very big trouble. So also for those of you that want to work with the private defense bar, this new guidance I think is going to be really powerful, and they're going to really need the support of the immigration bar with this sort of higher standard that's truthfully always been the standard under Padilla but is more clearly articulated. So this is a really good time to make yourself available to the private bar because I think you're going to start to see a lot more writs.